Welcome in. It is the MMA Podcast, episode 214, the last day of November. Creeping up, it's going to be UFC 218 in a couple days. I think I got that right. The MMA Podcast 214, UFC 218. They're getting pretty close, so it's hard to keep track. As always, joined by your boy, Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's going on, dude?
Jake, it is a thankful Thursday over here. Thankful to be back with you on the MMA Podcast, the 214th installation, maybe 214 and a half. I don't know. There might have been some half episodes in there. We're just racking them up. We had a lovely little Thanksgiving sabbatical, lots of goings on, but glad to be back. This is one of the most wonderful times of the year for MMA, for the UFC, for just promotions overall. We've even got a little Japan New Year's Eve card to look forward to, but I don't know if we'll be getting into that today specifically. But anyways, great to be back with you and the listeners at home for one of the most magical seasons in mixed martial arts.
Yes, like the UFC, the MMA Podcast does have a few half episodes, and I think very similar to the UFC, too. They were earlier on, I think, the first couple were times when I went back home for, like, Christmas or something, and I think I recorded one drunk in my car outside of my family's house at, like, 1 in the morning, just because there had been a recent story or I hadn't done one in a while, and I didn't feel like it deserved to be called a full episode, so we just stuck it in there as a half episode. But yeah, we are now starting to get into the holidays. We missed Thanksgiving. We hope you and yours had a nice holiday. This is actually, in all honesty, this is the longest time I think we've taken off in the 5+ years of doing this now. We started June 2012. I don't think we had taken more than a month off. Our last episode was in October. Like, this would have been the first month that we just didn't do a podcast since we started. But we're getting it in last minute, November 30th. You know, we're slipping into December now. It's Since our last episode, Michael Bisping has fought twice. And I guess that's where we'll kick it off. Very briefly, I want to talk about UFC 217. Even though it was so long in the past, I just want to touch on it because three upsets, three belt changes. We would be remiss not to discuss it, of course. Michael Bisping losing the 185-pound strap to George St. Pierre. Cody Garbrandt losing the strap to TJ Dillashaw, and in an absolute shocker, Joanna Jędrzejczyk losing the belt to Rose Namajunas. And frankly, I will be honest, I'm relieved we didn't do a podcast that week, because I would have been all talk about Joanna. I would have talked so much shit about Thug Rose, and I will admit it, I didn't see a way that she could win the fight. It looked like she was mentally beaten before the fight. I could not have misread the fight or the mental game worse. Rose marched in there and knocked her out quick, and this was not a fluke. Rose showed amazing technique, both with her footwork and the way she was throwing those strikes. Which, before we get into UFC 217, I guess we don't need a reason, but just in case people are wondering why we took so much time off, we both are fine. We've just both been very busy with our personal life. Our boy Pat with some business ventures of his own, and I'm in my final year of law school, which is luckily wrapping up. But the last month I've been going through a barrage of exams and papers and bullshit and reading, and I've been up to my nose. But today was the last day I turned in a 50 fucking page paper, and with the exception of an internship I'm doing next year, all the bullshit work is behind me, and 5 exams I have the next 2 weeks. But we're getting the podcast in, we're doing it big, and yeah, I just, you know, it had been a while, and I feel you all give us the time listening to the podcast. So we owe it to you to share a little bit about our own lives. But enough about us. Let's get back to UFC 217. Those belt changes. Holy shit. Before I want to talk about each fight briefly. But Pat, that was a wild card.
Yes, sir, it was. 217 was a pay-per-view that really delivered on all fronts. I mean, that whole fucking card from top to bottom, from the prelims to the pay-per-view portion, just fantastic. Three undisputed title fights. No, you know, no interims or anything like that. And, man, they all lived up to the hype. I'm sure, were those all first-round knockouts, too? No. Well, the Bisping versus GSP, I mean, that was a great fight. Great war for three rounds. GSP gets the drop in the eventual submission of Bisping there. And then, Jesus Christ.
Let's start. Rose versus Yoani and Jacek. 303. It couldn't be more fitting. That is the area code up in Denver where she trains at. 303, first round. TKO, Thug Rose gets the strap. And I did not think Rose had a chance in this one. Did you?
I mean, I thought she had a chance. I mean, in the sense that any fighter, when they step into the octagon, has a chance. I mean, for myself, I was looking at this one. I mean, Rose had just looked so good in every performance, save for the first fight she had with Claudia Gadelha, where a lot of people thought that could have gone to Claudia. But since then, she has definitively and, you know, fairly decisively beaten every woman she's come across. She's, you know, had some adversity in some fights, but she has still been able to get past that and outwork or finish all the women she's faced so far at 115 pounds. And as far as her striking credentials, did not think that Rose would be able to TKO her. Even being taller and longer, I mean, Yan Jacek with her striking credentials, did not see a TKO finish for Rose being a real viable option in this one. I thought, you know, if Rose were to have a chance, it'd be those long limbs getting a submission, but I did not see her just stumping Yan Jacek the way she did. It was a real shocker and, you know, great moment. And let's talk about her post-fight speech for a second. That was just, that was very great, very refreshing.
Inspiring
to hear
AF.
Oh, yeah, inspiring as a mug. And, you know, just a good general positive sentiment in a time where we really need that. So it was a great moment, great moment. And, that certainly would have been an egg on the face moment for myself. I would have been up there and said, oh, yeah, Jacek, she's got this thing wrapped up. There's no chance for Nama Yunus. It would have been like the Hendrix over... Hendrix over Wonder Boy? It would have been that all over again, Jake. We would have been looking bad after that one.
Who next for Thug Rose? Seems like one of two options. Either you give Yoana the rematch, or you give her Jessica Andrade, who just recently had a pretty lopsided win over Claudia Gadelha.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, for me, I am a fan of... You know, I feel like back in the day, the UFC was not immediately giving even its champions rematches. If you're the champion and you lost the belt, you had to get at least one fight under your belt just to get
that
rust off.
I hate the concept of giving the champ an immediate rematch unless it's like 5+ defenses in.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, certainly, Joanna... with what she's done in the UFC women's strawweight division, I mean, she really made that division. I mean, people probably forget that Carla Esparza was the inaugural champion because Yan Jacek just came in, took it away. She didn't even have a defense. You know, she put her claim stakes in as the top at 115 pounds some years ago and has really done well to maintain that position. So
I was going
to
say the baddest bitch, but that would be considered chauvinistic. And this is a feminist-friendly podcast.
Oh, absolutely. You know, women's rights are a lot better than women's wrongs.
When I say bad bitch, I hope you understand I mean that with the utmost respect.
That's an empowering term. That's what we're doing here.
Like, if I say you are a bad bitch, I am putting gravitas on that in a good way.
Yes, in all the best ways. Truly.
Rose and Yoana both a couple of bad bitches. God, the way Yoana had just looked so dominant. I mean, she was on one of the most dominant title reigns in UFC history. Like, unquestionably top 10. It's up there with Ronda, with Anderson, with Mighty Mouse, with GSP. I mean, like, she wasn't just winning fights, but she was winning them, mostly all of them. I mean, yeah, she had a couple of wars against Gedalia, but I mean, I think she clearly won both of those, or at least the second one, 3-2. The Carolina fight, she only lost the fourth round, and everyone else, she pretty much just battered to a fucking pulp. I mean, you look at pictures of fighters after they fought Joanna Champion, and they were fucked up. And it had been such a dominant run, and I mean, the longest, second to Mighty Mouse in the UFC. So to see it fall so hard and so early in the fight, like, and you know, not in a fluke way at all, it was just like, damn, Thug Rose has come a long way. And I think very similar to the way we saw TJ Dillashaw evolve when he was a little bit younger. Good transition on the next fight we're gonna break down. It's been a pleasure to see Rose really evolve from, you know, that fight she lost against, oh my god, I'm blanking. Her most recent loss to Carolina, which was close. You know, then she roared back, choked out Michelle Waterson, and then knocked out Joanna in the first round, and now she is the champ. So, excited to see who she gets next. I think Andrade and Joanna are both very close. I think both can make an argument, and I'll just give the nod to Joanna simply because she was, you know, as much as I hate title rematches, because, you know, in other sports it maybe makes more sense, but in the UFC and in MMA, where you maybe fight two or three times a year, if you're doing title rematches, then that means no matter what, you're gonna play the same title back twice, which is going to fill up most of the calendar year, which is going to mean you only have room for, what, one title challenger every year? Like, it seems like the pace we're unfortunately on in the UFC, where I think we should have less people holding up belts and be seeing two or three title challengers per year in each division instead of, you know, running all these fights back. That said, Joanna was on one of the most dominant title reigns ever. The first or second most reign. I mean, it's up there with Ronda, and it's arguable. I mean, Ronda probably was a little more dominant just because she broke every bitch's arm in like 7 seconds. But Joanna was dominant herself. I think she had 4 or 5 defenses. So because she beat Andrade, I say give it to Joanna as far as the first title defense for Thug Rose.
Yeah, and that's certainly not a bad call, I think. You know, and Joanna's come out saying, well, what was her statement? Saying that Thug Rose...
I want the belt, the belt.
Thug Rose is just... She's holding the belt for me. She's cleaning the belt for me, something like that. So, man, if she comes back, who knows? Maybe it was one of those things where she got complacent, she bought into her own hype, but... just judging by her, the way she's come out to the media, I'm like, okay, this does not seem to be a Ronda Rousey situation. This seems to be like a pissed off, motivated, fire under her ass Joanna situation, which could be incredibly scary for the strawweights. I think if they don't do an immediate rematch, which I think, I'm good either way. I think, you know what? I would even like to see Thug Rose take on Jessica Andrade. No, actually, I wouldn't. I would like to see Joanna take on Thug Rose straight away. Just get that rematch. Let's see if she can get the title back from the woman who took the title from her. She's worked hard enough in the 115-pound division. If they weren't to do that, I would say Thug Rose versus Andrade is the move. And then in the meantime, why not do Claudia Gadelha versus Joanna and Jacek part three? I mean, it would suck being a three-rounder, but unless they did it as, say, the main event of like a Fight Pass card or something like that, so it could be a five-round non-title. But, I mean, some say they still need to do a trilogy, and what better way to, you know, for Gadelha try and get back in the win column and get back on the title contention, or for Joanna and Jacek to also get back in the win column and get back to that title shot. So, yeah, I'm good either way, but I think probably preferably let's do that immediate rematch. We got to do it this time.
Okay, we see eye to eye on the immediate rematch. Let's move forward to the bantamweights. TJ Dillashaw against Cody Garbrandt, another TKO, an impressive as hell fight. I picked this one wrong as well. I'll fess up to it. I thought Cody just looked so dominant over Cruz, and Cruz and Dillashaw had fought so closely. But it was, you know, I don't think it was necessarily that lopsided fight leading up to the knockout. Both guys were getting their licks in, but that knockout was as sweet as could be. Dillashaw getting the TKO over Cody Garbrandt. And Garbrandt may be lobbying for a rematch, but I think his case is much slimmer than Joanna's, especially seeing that this was his first attempt at defending the title. Yeah, a lot of options for TJ at bantamweight. What did you make of the fight?
Well, this was definitely a styles make fights situation, and TJ, he just, with his arsenal, his strikes just have a little more pop on him, and we saw that in this fight. And, you know, maybe the familiarity. I mean, really, this fight was seconds away from going the other way. I was almost correct in my pick because I was thinking Cody was going to knock him out in the first round. That was how I picked it. He damn near did, but TJ was saved by the bell, was seconds away. I mean, he fucking had to be carried back to his stool. He was hurt real bad, and he was able to regroup, get it together. He came out looking fresh somehow, or as fresh as could be, starting round two. And, I mean, this fight was just a war, even though it didn't even go too full. It was a great bit of back and forth, and just an amazing TKO by TJ. I certainly don't think this will be the last fight between these two, given how this one played out. I'm with you again here, Jake. I don't know that Cody has really done enough to warrant an immediate rematch. I want to say this was his first. Was this his first professional loss, or certainly his first loss in the UFC? At least to my recollection, I don't believe that Cody had lost in the UFC before. But
first pro loss as well. He was 11-0.
First, there it is. You know, but still, you hadn't even made a successful defense once. Not enough for you to get that immediate title shot. I'm sure Dominic Cruz, if he's able to get a W. Or wait, no, that's right. He was pulled from his last fight. I mean, who knows? Maybe now Cruz will get slotted in against TJ, and they can run that fight back. I'm sure Dominic wouldn't mind that. But no, there's certainly not a shortage of options as to who can challenge TJ next for the 135-pound title. I'm looking specifically at Jimmy Rivera's direction.
Jimmy Rivera is a name being tossed around. He was going to fight Dominic Cruz at UFC 219. That got scrapped. I'm not sure if Jimmy Rivera has a new opponent yet. I'm Googling right now to see. Let's see. No, he... he was replaced by John Lineker. So we're going to see Rivera versus Lineker at UFC 219. Let's, I guess, move on up to that middleweight title. Georges St-Pierre, now your fourth multi-weight champion in UFC history. First was Randy, then we had BJ, then we had Connor, Now George St. Pierre, champ at middleweight and welterweight. I actually hadn't thought of this before we aired, but also one of the few guys to have three separate title reigns. He got the belt, lost it to Hughes. He got the belt from Hughes, lost it to Sarah, won it back against Sarah, relinquished it after Hendricks, now has beaten Bisping for the middleweight belt. Whether he relinquishes it or defends it, remains to be seen. But before we talk about that title, let's talk about the fight. Michael Bisping, really just, you know, as tough as the guy is, just got outclassed here. GSP, it wasn't his best fight, but at the same time, he didn't show the ring rust that a lot of people thought he would. He still looked game. Whether he looks game enough to face the top guys of today, like Robert Whittaker, Kelvin Gastelum, and Tyron Woodley, remains to be seen, but it was good enough to take the belt off the middleweight champ, Michael the Count Bisping, who fought 3 weeks later. We'll touch on that soon, too. But, yeah, GSP, Bisping, quick thoughts before we talk about the crazy motherfucker turning around to fight 3 weeks later against a killer in China.
Oh, yeah, I mean, this was another fight that almost went the way that I thought. I want to say this entire fight card, the only fights that I got wrong were the championship fights. It was a pretty fucking good night of guessing and predictions. Aside from those, I thought Bisping would be able to get it done just with the momentum on his side, the height, GSP never having fought at 185 pounds. I thought Bisping would be able to get a unanimous decision or a TKO. Bisping has always been good counter wrestling, you know, and he's not facing a guy that is, you know, NCAA D1 champ or anything. Although, given that, GSP is a guy who has made a living essentially taking down NCAA Division I champions and just shitting on everyone in the realm of mixed martial arts. And that's what he did. Came in undersized. Took some lumps from Bisping, too. Got cut up pretty good. Bisping had some good elbows with the ground and pound that opened up some lacerations. Really was giving GSP a difficult time. It seemed like the profuse bleeding, Jake. It was getting a little gruesome there. But GSP, it was vintage. It was some antique UFC bloodletting. It was good. A real throwback to the heydays of GSP. Good fight. And you know what? GSP, he reached out. He touched him right on the jaw. Hit him with a good punch. Dropped him. And was able to get the rear naked on Michael Bisping. And yeah, GSP, I mean, he was throwing fucking wheel kicks in there. He was, you know, pulling out some stops, really. Doing some things that we'd never seen GSP do. It was good to see him gunslinging a little bit, like the days of old, you know, in his first title reign, in the road up to the title. It was a nice performance all the way around for both fighters.
And that kind of pivots to, like, a week later, Anderson Silva backing out of the Kelvin Gastelum fight because he tested hot. And in steps Michael Bisping, who just lost his belt to GSP, and he's going to turn around and fight in 3 weeks between his last fight and go to China and take on an absolute murderer in Kelvin Gastelum. Apparently, that's exactly what he did. He went over to Shanghai, and although Kelvin made quick work of him, entering himself into the middleweight title picture after a loss to Chris Weidman, I don't know, showed a lot of guts by Bisping. It showed you truly how much of a killer Gastelum is, because we know how hard it is to take out the Count, and Gastelum did it in the first round with ease, seemingly. I'm sure it wasn't that easy, but he made it look like it. So after Kelvin defeats Bisping, you have an interim champion in Robert Whittaker, a current champion that Dana White just said he doesn't know if he'll fight again, at least at middleweight. A lot of moving parts here. What do you predict happens with all of these moving parts with GSP, Bisping, Gastelum, Whitaker, the belt? What happens? I guess the story is Michael Bisping will look to take one last fight on March 17th in Europe on St. Patrick's Day versus a soon-to-be-determined opponent. Probably a winnable fight for Bisping.
Oh, yeah. I think Bisping, he's going to get the golden handshake. I'm sure they'll set him up with something nice over there in the UK, something. He has a fighting chance in. Give him enough time to recuperate from all that traumatic head injury he's endured in the last several weeks. But as far as the title picture, now with GSP being the middleweight champion, Robert Whittaker having his interim belt, I think GSP, he's going to vacate that title. He's going to go fight Tyron Woodley at 170 pounds for that belt. And I think they are going to make Robert Whittaker, they're just going to make him the undisputed champion because of, essentially he is, he beat Yoel Romero fairly soundly. And he absolutely destroyed Jacare. He's really beat the absolute living fuck out of everybody that he's fought at 185 pounds. So I don't think there's really much of a question as to who the undisputed champ would be if GSP vacates, which, I think he does. I don't think the GSP wants any part of Bobby Knuckles. Robert Whittaker is just looking too big. The strikes are too ferocious these days. I don't think he wants a piece of that. It wasn't really easy goings for him against Bisping anyways in that fight. And, I think Bisping goes for T-Wood at 170 and, Robert Whittaker gets made undisputed at 185. And then, just a question of who the hell they picked to fight him in there. With him having beaten Jacare and Romero so demonstrably, I don't even know who they could get in there to challenge. But maybe Luke Rockhold. I don't know.
I'd love to see Gastelum versus Whitaker. Talk about a couple of fucking. Ooh. Even though I think KG should probably be at 170, and let's be honest, the way Weidman beat Gastelum, Weidman would deserve that fight above Gastelum. Let's not forget, Gastelum is an absolute murderer, a fucking beast, and Weidman submitted him. So let's not sleep on Chris Weidman. It turns out Yoel Romero didn't murder him after all. Weidman is a very, very live player in this middleweight belt picture, as is Rockhold, as is Gastelum if he decides to stay up there, as is, we'll see where Romero is, who is getting older. I think he's almost 40. It's a evolving picture. We'll see what happens. You know, it's still a big question mark, so hopefully this month we find out. But GSP just can't sit on it. Let's keep things moving if you're not going to fight again at 85. So I guess enough about previous cards and all that. We've talked about GSP, about Bisping. The other big thing I guess people have been talking about, this whole Conor McGregor, is he ever going to fight? You know, is he ever going to defend his belt? I feel like just the way he's been, I don't want to say the UFC has mismanaged him, but let's think about it. He fought Jose Aldo 2 years ago, December 2015, so 24 months ago. He knocked out Aldo in 13 seconds, and I think that has been kind of the peak of McGregor mania, even though him beating Alvarez and being the double champ was also very, very big, and it's close. I think just the fervor around the stunningness of the 13-second knockout to the fact that Aldo had been such a dominant champ, the fact that they had been touting Aldo versus Connor on a world tour for like a year, and the fight was finally going down. It almost went down at 189, but he had to back out at the last minute, and Mendez subbed in. We had all been waiting for this fight, and it was in Vegas, and the Irish had taken Vegas over, and he knocked him out in 13 seconds. That was insane. I think that's been your height of Connor mania so far. And what's happened since then? Like, he has fought Nate Diaz in two exhibition fights that literally meant nothing. He made quick work of Eddie Alvarez. All of those fights were in 2016. And then he spent the last year going to boxing, getting beaten up by Floyd, had a baby, jumped in a Bellator cage. Apparently now there's a hit out for him in Ireland. Now, just recently at a media scrum, Dana White saying he has no idea if Connor is even going to fight again. I mean, the reason when all the Floyd Connor stuff came out, I was saying, and I will stick to what I said. I obviously can't stick to the fact that I didn't think it was going to happen. But I can stick to the fact that I thought it was a terrible idea. Because just like I said on this podcast, probably whenever it was, a year ago, nine months ago, whenever these rumors really started to get big about Floyd versus Connor, what I said was, what is going to be the incentive for Connor to come back to the UFC and fight another dude in a cage if he makes $100 million fighting Floyd and basically is set for the rest of his life and doesn't have to worry about shit? Like, if you have $100 million, you're set, your kids are set, your grandkids are set, your great-grandkids are set, you invest that properly, you're set forever. And you will die wealthy, and your kids will die wealthy, all that great shit. Why are you going to step in there against a guy like Max Holloway, or a guy like Justin Gaethje, or a dude like Tyron Woodley, who's just going to pound your head in if you make one wrong move? You're risking your bones, you're risking, most importantly, your brain. I mean, one bad knockout can change a fighter forever. One bad concussion can damage a brain permanently. So, and on top of that, like, what are you gaining by fighting in the UFC? Like, are you going to get $100 million more to take a UFC fight? UFC is going to pay you at most, what, 15 to 20 mil to step in a cage? And that's if you're, like, superstar crazy Connor. Even people like Mighty Mouse are only going to get paid 1 or 2 mil. Like, so for a guy with $100 million, you're going to, like, take on another, what, 5 or 6 fights and risk your life and limb and brain to, like, what, add 25% to your net worth? Like, not even double what you're worth. And you're still a star either way. Ireland still loves you either way. You still have a wife and a baby who love you either way. Like, there is absolutely no reason for Connor to come back. And if he does, I'll be happy, selfishly, as an MMA fan, because I love seeing him fight. He brings so much to the pre-fight. He brings so much. He's so exciting. I mean, that 1-2 he throws, watching him throw a left hook is maybe the closest thing we've had in the UFC to a Mike Tyson. I mean, just the way that fucking left hand, that overhand left, I mean, not just the left hook, but the left hand of Connor's just crumbles people. It's so fun to watch. But I think the UFC misplayed their hand tremendously, letting him go over to boxing to fight Floyd. And yeah, the UFC and Dana made a little bit of money. Dana made money, Floyd made money, Connor made a lot of money. But in the long run, I don't think it's going to be worth it. I don't think what the UFC made from the Floyd Mayweather fight is going to be worth a potential career that we might miss out on from Connor. And if he does fight again, awesome. I don't think he has many fights left, but incentive-wise, why the fuck would you come back? unless maybe you're trying to get a mob boss off of you. Fucking the story is he went in some bar in Dublin last week, and like some mob dude had beaten up his friend, so he goes and finds this mob dude and beats the fuck out of him. And this mob dude that Connor beat the fuck out of apparently has ties to like some mob boss drug dealer motherfucker who put a $900,000 hit out on him, according to various sources, including, I was just listening to Brendan Schaub on the new JRE MMA show. We have more competition now, Pat. Fucking Rogan's doing a weekly MMA show. If we didn't have few enough listeners, now fucking Rogan's taking our MMA A crowd, too, but,
That bastard.
That fucker. No, I love Rogan. Rogan's MMA and non-MMA related podcast, but yeah, apparently all this coming out, I'm really not giving it mind. When you hear ridiculous stories like these, nothing usually comes of it. I'm hoping, I mean, I obviously don't want Connor, just like I said, I selfishly want him to come back and fight again as a fan of the sport. I selfishly, or I guess it's not that selfish to say I don't want him to die, but yeah, I don't want Connor to die, I guess, being as it is that he is a human being, and I'm a human, and I don't like hearing about people getting killed. Pat, thoughts? Connor? Any Connor related musings?
Oh boy. Well, you know, you're right, and I know Dana White had mentioned it as well when he said, you know, who knows if he's ever going to come back. I mean, he just got $100 million plus from one fight in boxing.
Bozo, and fuck.
What is your incentive if your bread and butter is doing 2-a-days in the gym and getting punched in the face for a living? What is your incentive? If you make 9 figures, you're pretty much good, right? Like, you made it. You made to where you're trying to get to go. And you've made it to a point where most athletes in your sport have never got... Well, actually, you're the only athlete in your sport to get to that point. I guarantee you there is no mixed martial artist that has made as much money as Conor McGregor, unless...
George Roop?
GSP... I mean, George Roop, I don't know. I mean, Al Iaquinta, I know he's been doing the real estate thing. I mean, that's... and again, that's what you got to do. You got to make your money work for you. That's like right. You said, if Conor starts doing something like that, and I mean, hey, that's as big a roll of a dice as anything. I mean, you know, let's not pretend, you know, that there ain't risk in real estate or stocks or anything, or, you know, the UFC. It's all just different forms of risk, you know, and inside the cage, that is the risk is your physical well-being. I mean, you're going to get a purse no matter what, whether you show up, whether you win, you're going to be cashing some checks at the end of that. But the potential upsides are great. If you knock someone out in 10 seconds and you get a performance of the night and you get your win money and you get your show money, you know, then you're doing about as great as you possibly can. But on the opposite side of the spectrum, it's not like just a bad investment where, you know, let's say you buy this piece of real estate and things, the prospecting doesn't go over quite like you think, and those home values don't quite go up the way you expect, and now you're out some money, you know, and your bank account ain't looking so good. That's a far cry from getting the ever-living shit beaten out of you and having some kind of irreparable harm done to yourself. That's the stakes are much different. So once you made that much money, if, you know, what is your incentive for getting back in there? He already won 2 titles. As you mentioned, Jake, that certainly the Jose Aldo fight, that was the peak. That was friggin' Conor mania. That was the Beatles coming to the U.S. That was about as big as it could ever get. Even him taking that title from Eddie Alvarez, it was a moment. It was a moment, but it didn't seem like the moment. That wasn't the Jose Aldo moment. So, yeah, what do you really have? I mean, at the same time, if you're going out and you're acting a fool and you're doing stupid things like beating up wise guys and friggin' getting in trouble with the mob, which is all, you know, as far as I know, just, you know, speculation and rumor and things like that. But, I mean, now it's kind of sounding like maybe more of that is happening or more of that is true. I don't know. Then that's really not smart either, because then, again, you've made it, but now you're just going out taking arguably even stupider risks, and you know, it's not good to hear, but it's not surprising, Jake. Notorious B.I.G. said it, mo' money, mo' problems, and, you know, they just manifest in different sorts. You know, you think that money's going to fix it, man, but that it's not always it. It's not always it.
Yeah, and, you know, this is just yet another story of, you know, a fighter to reach such a lofty height, and I'm not saying he's for sure gonna fall or anything like that, but it's just taken a bizarre turn. You know, you had the height of Brock, and then he gets beaten up by Kane and gets diverticulitis and goes back to wrestling. You had the height of Ronda; she gets beaten once and then just looks completely mentally done for the rest of her career. You have Anderson, who gets finished by Weidman, you know, gets KO'd, breaks his leg, then gets caught for roids. You have Jones, who gets caught for coke and roids and a hit and run and more roids, and it's just like, man, you've seen so many people take these huge falls from grace. You really hope it doesn't happen to Connor, especially with all this bullshit, like Bellator, him jumping in the cage. You know, it's there's been more negative news about Connor than positive lately, so I hope things start to go better as far as that goes. What else have we had before we get into breaking down this weekend's fights? I know we had some fight announcements made. UFC 219, our main event is going to be Holmes-Cyborg, but I think we have a co-main now, Khabib versus Barboza. What do you make of that one?
Oh, man, that's fireworks at 155. I mean, Barboza has gotten more consistent as of late. Always a tough go. Always top 10 at 155 pounds. Super dangerous, man. It's really going to be a great clash, kind of that classic striker versus grappler matchup, except for these two are two of the most feared at what they do. I mean, Edson Barboza, I want to say the only fighter to have TKOs from leg kicks to, like, low leg kicks TKO, TKOs from kicks to the body, and head kick TKOs. He's super vicious, and Khabib is a direct contrast to that. Just as vicious of a grappler. Seems like if he just gets a hold of you at any point, if he can just grab onto you, he will wrestle you down to the ground. He will just fucking ragdoll you, and he'll just make it a very bad day. He'll ground and pound you right into the dirt. I'm very excited for this one. I mean, I feel like either guy has a good chance to win. They're both just savages at what they do. Both very fearsome fighters. I hope that whoever wins this fight just gets some fucking consistency going. These guys, it seems like, Edson Barboza, I feel like he's been more active as of late, but Khabib, certainly, over the years, just has not had that activity. He's been out with injuries so many times, weight-cutting issues, not even making it to the scale. He's got to get back in there, and he's got to get back in there with some consistency. Either way, I'm very excited for this scrap. It's going to be a fucking violent co-main, and, man, I don't even know who I'm leaning towards in this one, but it's gonna be a goodie.
It should be fun. I'm leaning Khabib just because he's looked so dominant in his career. But I mean, let's hope he makes the fight. Let's hope there's no tiramisu involved this time around. I guess to UFC 220. We had another fight announcement made. Daniel Cormier taking on Volkan Ozdemir. We'd heard whispers about that, and I think we actually broke it down recently. But we will move on. Just a note that was made for the co-main of, or not the co-main of UFC 220, but just a fight on UFC 220. I'm thinking it will be the co-main That is the Super Bowl card, and I'm hearing rumblings that the main event they want to make for that is Stipe Miocic versus the winner of this weekend's pairing between Francis Ngannou and Alistair Overeem. So speaking of, let's get to this weekend. We got a Bellator card tomorrow that doesn't matter. Has a couple folks on it. I noticed David Rickles. I think Julia Budd is on the co-main event. Chidi and Jaquani fighting Hisaki Kato. Chris Honeycutt fighting Rafael Lovato. Main event, Julia Budd, a big favorite against Arian Bienko. So, yeah, I might tune in that one. Also, the Tough finale, also known as The Ultimate Fighter, a new world champion finale, also going to be tomorrow night, Friday, December 1st, on Fox Sports 1. A couple familiar names on that one. Joe Soto, Gerald Meerschaert going to be fighting Eric Spicely. Middleweight fight between Sean O'Malley and Tarion Ware. A couple of guys from, I think that Dana White looking for a fight thing. I think they're from there, and if not, I'm just making a terrible mistake. The main event was going to be the Tough finale between Nico Montano and Ciara Eubanks, but apparently today Eubanks was ruled medically ineligible for the card after a visit to the hospital overnight for allegedly, quote, miscalculating her weight cut. And she's going to be replaced by Roxy Matafieri. How exactly you miscalculate a weight cut, I don't know. Like, when I hear about like, oh, this rocket ship crashed because they miscalculated the gravity and the airflow and just, you know, like, I understand miscalculating, you know, something that complicated, that complex, rockets, airplanes, shit like that. Miscalculating a weight cut. I'm pretty sure as far as a weight cut goes, there's your weight minus the amount of weight you need to lose equals the amount of weight you need to weigh in at for Ciara Eubanks. That was 125, or I don't know if they were allowing the extra pound because it is going to be for the inaugural UFC Women's Flyweight Championship. So, yeah, we're going to see... We're going to see Roxy Matafieri, I guess, fighting for the inaugural women's flyweight title against Nico Montano. And, you know, not to sully the winner of this fight, it just makes sense, and I'm hearing a lot of rumblings, that the first challenger for this belt may be Valentina Shevchenko, who just fought Amanda Nunes for the 135-pound belt. Pardon me. And, if Valentina Shevchenko really does fight the winner of this fight, then we're probably going to have a situation very, very similar to what we had at strawweight, where they crown an inaugural champion after a season of Tough. The winner gets the belt, and in her first defense, just gets absolutely smashed by a European with a long and difficult to pronounce last name. Thinking Shevchenko is going to smash whoever wins the Tough finale. And I hate if that sounds like I'm taking away, you know, from either fighter, which I guess I am, but, it's more a tip of the hat to Valentina Shevchenko, who, I mean, if you think about it, Holly Holm is about to fight Cyborg for the 145-pound belt. Shevchenko made Holly Holm look like a scrub. Shevchenko, I thought, was going to make Nunez look like a scrub and take the belt. I think Shevchenko is maybe the most talented female mixed martial artist in the UFC. I mean, yeah, she has those losses to Nunez, but both were very, very close. I think Amanda is also up there as someone who we really don't give enough credit to as an incredible champion. But, enough shitting on the finalists of Tough 26. Any thoughts on tomorrow's events? Bellator, I don't know what number it's going to be. We'll call it 216 just because it's in between the podcast and the UFC we're doing. And Tough 26 before we get to UFC 218. I'm excited to bring that down.
Yeah, man. Well, you know what? I thought it was so funny. As you were describing the sentiment that whoever wins this inaugural UFC Women's Flyweight Championship would get smashed by a European female fighter coming in for the first title defense of the flyweight title, I was thinking, wouldn't it be funny if that were Joanna and Jacek again?
Because It could be.
She was talking about 125 too, and I said, man, wouldn't that be something if she goes in there and just did the same thing and then just went on another little run at 125 pounds? But
that'd be hilarious. The tough champ smasher.
That would be good. But you know, I think if it is Valentina, I think Valentina could certainly get that done and go on a similar run herself. She is fierce, but man, I don't know, 125 pounds, that would be really interesting. I'm more excited for the division to open up than, let's say, necessarily this card itself or even the inaugural crowning. I think it's going to be interesting to see where a lot of the more established talent at 115 and 135 pounds, you know, who goes up and who goes down, you know, who's fighting where, you know, who's really struggling to cut to 115, or, you know, who's maybe fighting a little too bulky at 135. I think there's going to be a good little migration, and there's going to be some sorting out. And I think 125 will be really competitive. A lot of 125 pound bouts. I want to say, like, damn near, actually the majority of the card is women's flyweight bouts tomorrow. So, should be good. I'm looking forward to it in that respect. Really, on paper, this is like the most, this is like the most worthless UFC card you've ever seen on paper. If we're just being honest, if we're calling it what it is, but me just being a degenerate gambler and a huge fight fan, I'm probably going to watch this whole thing from start to finish tomorrow anyways. And, you know, I say it all the time. That's usually where some of the best action happens. It looks like garbage on paper, except for, you know what, we did kind of glaze over it. The UFC in Australia card, that was unanimously like one of the most boring cards there's ever been. 10 out of 13 fights going to decision. That was a rough one. But again, typically, even though, you know, some of them you can call, some of them are easy to see coming, I think this one could be a little bit of a surprise. Again, and those women's fights are always fun too. The WMMA is always very entertaining. So on paper,
fucking women.
The ladies, you know, it's underwhelming on paper, but hey, they're going to crown a new inaugural champion. Should be decent for that, if nothing else.
And that brings us to Saturday, UFC 218 from the Little Caesars in Detroit, Michigan. I like how my voice is cracked there, and I'm starting to near 30 years old. Awesome. We got a lot of
no one noticed.
We got a lot of fun fights. Let's get some of the prelims out of the way. Felice Herrig and what should be a fun fight with Courtney Casey. We got David Tamer versus Jacare Clause, an underrated fight. Looking at both guys, underrated fight. Alex Cowboy Oliveira versus Yancy Medeiros, and Paul Felder, very dangerous in his own right, taking on the dangerous Charles Oliveira. And one of the best prelim fights of the year, probably, Felder versus Oliveira. We can go ahead and link and lump Tisha Torres versus Michelle Waterson in there with him. I think Oliveira Felder should probably be on the main card, and Torres Waterson should probably be on the prelim card. But, you know, equal opportunity. We want to put chicks on the main card, etc., etc. I'm with it. I'm progressive. Like I said, this is a feminist-friendly podcast. So, you know what? I'm all for putting Tisha Torres and Michelle Waterson on the main card, even though they're inferior because they're women. What do you think of those prelim fights here on the MMA podcast? Feminist friendly.
Women's rights are better than women's wrongs.
That's right.
You know, the great prelims, really. Even the fight pass The Fight Pass portion of the prelims has some decent ones. Really, Amanda Bobby Joe Cooper taking on the much maligned Angela Magana. Interesting to see her buried on the Fight Pass curtain jerker.
I think she lives in Puerto Rico too. So I'm glad she didn't die in that storm.
I think you're the only person who has actually felt that sentiment. That
You think I'm the only person who is glad she's not dead?
Wow. No, I'm just kidding. That's terrible. That's terrible. We love Angela Magana here on the MMA podcast.
You know who hates her? Davey Boy, ex-host. Or I shouldn't say ex-host because he may guest host at another time. Our friend Davey Boy will just go on the meanest Twitter rants on her. I don't know what she did to scorn her boy Davey, but Davey, not a fan.
Well, you know, I mean, Angela, she made it pretty easy to be not a fan of her, although I think I'm doing that right now with my English-speaking abilities. Anyhow, no, that'll be interesting to see how that turns out. I mean, Angela was the victim. She was assaulted by Cyborg. We all know that. That's how that went down. But, no, Felice Herrig versus Courtney Casey, the Fox Sports one, that's really where the payoff starts. Tamer versus Close, like you mentioned, that'll be a good one. Definitely underrated. Tamer had a great victory in his last time out over Lando Venata. Alex Cowboy Oliveira versus Yancy Medeiros. Solid scrap. Yancy, former 155er, up there at 170. And, Charles Oliveira versus Paul Felder. I want to say Paul Felder has had a couple different opponents coming in and out for this fight card, but finally got slotted with Charles Oliveira. Not an easy out. Both of those guys are definitely tough. I'm thinking the Irish Dragon. I don't know. That's a coin flip of a fight. I want to go with the Irish Dragon on this one, but Charles Oliveira, he's got weapons everywhere. Definitely a great fight to be featured on the Fox Sports 1 prelim card.
Yeah, and that brings us to a very fun four fights on the main card at UFC 218. Let's start with Henry Cejudo and Sergio Pettis. This, I think, you know, the winner of this fight is up there with Joseph Benavidez as the next in line for that title. Whether, you know, what's going to happen next with Mighty Mouse remains to be seen. Mighty Mouse has beaten every man involved, so... Or I don't know if he's beaten Pettis. No, he hasn't fought Pettis yet. But chances are, at least I hope, that Mighty Mouse's next fight is against TJ Dillashaw. So I don't know. You know, I think Benavidez deserves a title shot. He did beat Henry Cejudo via split decision in his last fight, although that was about a year ago. He's won six in a row since losing to Mighty Mouse for the second time. I think that's enough weight to get slotted back into a fight. But Henry Cejudo versus Sergio Pettis, after Joseph Benavidez, I think you got to put the winner of this fight next, because both of them have been looking really impressive. You know, Pettis, back at UFC 185, was still really young. I mean, this is over 2 years ago, so I think he was like 21 at the time. He lost via TKO, made a mistake at his return to flyweight fighting Ryan Benoit. Since then, he has won four pretty lopsided decisions against Chris Carriasso, Chris Kaledis, John Moraga, and Brandon Moreno. And those names in Moreno and Moraga are not slouches. Henry Cejudo, who... I believe is the favorite in this fight, if I'm not mistaken. Let me look here. Yeah, he is minus 300, actually. So kind of a sizable favorite. Lost two in a row against Mighty Mouse, and then a close fight against Joseph Benavidez. Dude, his fight a couple months ago against Wilson Hayes, that KO in the second round, it looked like a different Henry Cejudo. We've known him as a dominant wrestler. And, you know, a literally Olympic gold medal wrestler at that, taking gold at freestyle at the 08 Beijing Games. He didn't just have his wrestling and okay striking. He looked so confident on his feet, his footwork, the way he was throwing punches. I mean, his defense. He took 9 months off between the Benavidez and Hayes fight, and he improved a lot there. Cejudo's still in his own right, you know, even though he's 30, still evolving, still young in his MMA career, just 13 fights in. And I think there's a reason why he's such a big favorite, and a big part of it is how impressive he looked against Wilson Hayes. So I'm taking Henry Cejudo, but definitely a flight at flyweight to keep your eye on there when the fights really get rolling into the main card.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, this is definitely a pay-per-view worthy scrap here. Sergio Pettis, he's 6-1 in his last 7 fights. The only loss he has is he was TKO'd by Ryan Benoit in his return to flyweight. Since then, has rattled off 4 consecutive decision victories. Definitely, I would say the victory over John Moraga was one of the more notable ones, but also Brandon Moreno. He had been doing some good things there at the flyweight division himself, so that was definitely a very solid victory for him to get as well. So both of these guys definitely have a lot of momentum. Both of them definitely have a lot of upside. I apologize, got the work line going off there.
No worries.
The fight with Benavidez and Cejudo, that was definitely a very close one. A lot of people thought that could have gone Cejudo's way. Very close scrap, but yeah, and especially with Cejudo looking as good as he did against Hayes, man, this fight is looking super close. And definitely a title eliminator here at flyweight. Mighty Mouse very well could be looking at TJ Dillashaw for his next opponent, but as far as at the 125-pound division, whoever wins this fight is certainly got to be next in line for Demetrius.
Definitely, yeah. It's it's for sure. It's up in the air what is going to go next in the flyweight division. Mighty Mouse just breaking that record there, 11 title defenses. So I guess only time will tell what's next. Justin Gaethje versus Eddie Alvarez. Boy, oh boy, this is the fight everyone's looking forward to. You have guys who are just prone to violence, guys who go out there and throw with furiosity, put their chins out there, get tagged, take shots, give shots, trade shots, get in wars. And I hope this doesn't have the curse of, I feel like every fight that, oh, this one's going to end quick, all those fights end up going to a decision. So I hope we don't see that scenario go down. But this is an all-violence fight. Stylistically, I'm favoring Justin Gaethje. You know, Eddie Alvarez gets tagged a lot. He's got an iron heart, iron chin, but he gets tagged a lot. I don't know if he can manage to get tagged by a large amount of those strikes that Justin Gaethje is throwing. And not just heavy hands, but you know, he's got leg kicks that absolutely chop guys down. Gaethje's my new favorite lightweight. I'm 100% team Gaethje going in. So I will admit I'm a little biased. No hate against Eddie. I'm just a big Gaethje fan, and man, this is going to be a fun fight. This has fight of the night written all over it. I can't wait.
Oh heck yeah! This is just going to be a dramatic affair, I'm sure. Whether it lasts one round, 2 rounds. I mean, as we've seen with both Eddie Alvarez and Justin Gaethje, usually their fights are both very fun affairs, both back and forth. Both guys definitely take one to give one. Eddie Alvarez and Justin Gaethje both. We've seen them both get dropped in their fights just to get in there and take a chance to deliver some punishment of their own. Typically for both guys, it has worked out. Justin Gaethje, we all know about his credentials in the World Series of Fighting, being their only champion over there, being undefeated, NCAA D1 All-American, and made a big impression in his UFC debut against Michael Johnson. That was a huge obstacle for him to overcome in his first fight in the UFC, and won in typical Gaethje fashion. It was a violent slugfest, and this fight with Eddie Alvarez certainly seems to be slotted to be more of the same. That's really what both these guys do. They're both very similar stylistically. Both have strong wrestling, but both really stand and trade and duke it out more often than not. So I think, this is a tough one. Really, this could go either way. I could honestly see either guy knocking the other guy out. But I think Gaethje, he's the young buck on the come up, and the underground king. You know, he was having a rough go of it with Dustin Poirier, and that was ruled a no contest due to illegal knees. A lot of people throwing some shade at Eddie, saying he was cheating just to get out of that fight. And I don't know about all that business, but it certainly wasn't looking good for him against Poirier in the early go ahead.
Intention or not, I think it should have been a DQ, but that's a whole another story.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. And I mean, with a fighter as well seasoned as Eddie Alvarez, you know, at what time have you competed and that was an okay strike? You know, the answer is never. So,
pussy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, not a good look. I think Gaethje is going to come out in this one and get the KO finish. But, I think could go either way. Alvarez, still, he's got a hell of a background. He's got a hell of a list of credentials himself. He's certainly beaten a who's who, and, you know, he's got lots of great TKOs on his resume as well. I just think this is going to be the time for Gaethje.
And that takes us into the co-main event, which, man, you know, I was saying that Gaethje Alvarez was my fight of the night, the all violence, you know, my most anticipated fight on the card. Let's not let that take away from the fact that this co-main event and main event are both fucking bangers. The co-main, of course, being Alistair Overeem, the famed heavyweight striker, against the newcomer, and you don't hear that term often within the UFC heavyweight division, Francis Ngannou. Boy, this is gonna be a war. You know, you have it's funny because as much as they are similar, they're very different. You have two, you know, guys who are very similar in size, strength, the fact that they're both strikers. But Overeem brings a much different form of striking to the table, and footwork and kicks and knees and clinching. And Ngannou is just a powerful, lights out, will just smoke you with boxing. Knocked out Andre Arlovsky in the first round. Kimura'd Anthony Hamilton in the first round. Has finished every single one of his fights in the first or second round in his career. That's some Shane Carwin shit. The guy just throws with absolute demolishing power. And he's facing Alistair, the demolition man, who is 37, getting older. He has a lot of fights under his belt. And his record, 43-15. It's kind of, Ngannou's only 6 years younger. He's also in his 30s, but obviously a lot fewer fights, only 10-1 himself. Both of them are on the poster with strange yellow symbols carved into their head. I don't know what the deal is with that. Overeem seems to have the Monster Energy Drink logo shaved into his head and dyed yellow, and Ngannou seems to have a yellow lightning bolt in his head. Strange poster effect. One of the strangest I've ever seen on any UFC poster, but that's beside the fact. Both of these dudes are bangers. The odds are actually favoring Ngannou, by quite a bit, -235 against Overeem's +195. Gaethje was -185 to plus Alvarez's 160, if you were wondering about that. But Ngannou, a pretty heavy favorite here against Overeem, even though not that crazy, but still moderate. And I think I'm agreeing with Vegas. I have Ngannou just because, you know, you have a guy like Overeem, and as skilled as he is on the feet, I mean, he has gotten dropped a lot of times. Just, you know, he got KO'd by Bigfoot, got KO'd by Travis Brown, got KO'd by Ben Rothwell, got KO'd just about a year ago by Stipe Miocic at UFC 203. Has since come back and defeated Mark Hunt and Fabricio Werdum very impressively, and apparently this is a title eliminator fight, so, you know, it's obviously this fight is up there, but I'm taking the up-and-comer from Cameroon, the Predator, Francis Ngannou.
Jake, I am all jacked up on Mountain Dew for this fight. This is...
Chip, I'm going to come at you like a spider monkey.
I'm still sitting in my dirty pee pants. Francis Ngannou has, that was an apt comparison to Shane Carwin. Because really, he's burst on the scene. I mean, there's hardly been anyone to come out and just strike so much fear into the hearts of the competitors. It's... he just is a huge heavyweight, 6'4" he's listed at, and man, he was looking real fearsome hitting the mitts too, in his last open weight. I want to say he was just looking even better physically than I could recall him seeing before. Was looking super quick, like he was throwing those strikes much quicker than I remember seeing him throw. It's going to be an interesting fight, though. He's going from Andrei Arlovsky, who is, you know, he's still the pit bull, but he's, let's not kid ourselves, a few years past his prime, for sure. He's been in the UFC since 2000 or 2001. He made his UFC debut, and he's been fighting at the top level ever since. He's taken a bit of damage before then. Taking the Andrei Arlovsky fight aside, he fought Anthony Hamilton, Bohan Mihailovic, Curtis Blaydes. And now Curtis Blaydes, he's looking better than he did when he first fought Francis Ngannou. That was some time ago. He's looked like he's made some strides himself, but he hasn't fought near the level of talent that Alistair Overeem has. I mean, Alistair Overeem, as you mentioned, you know, just beat Fabricio Werdum. Not the most impressive fight that he's had, but his fights with Werdum have been typically underwhelming, at least two out of the three. Although the KO over Mark Hunt was a very good effort there. He hasn't fought the Junior Dos Santos and the Roy Nelsons and the Stefan Struves that Alistair Overeem has. And, that's I feel like it's got to be a factor, especially with Overeem coming back off of the Miocic loss. He looks like he's fighting smarter. It looks like he's really working on the game plan a lot and getting back to striking intelligently, like, you know, the K-1 Grand Prix champion that he is, and, you know, not just going in there and getting into slugfest. He's won 6 out of his last 7, again, with the only one of those losses being to the champ and with, you know, some more notable names than Ngannou has ever faced. So this is going to be a tough test, and again, striking. This is Alistair's, this is his bread and butter. That's where he makes his living. And as big and powerful as Ngannou is, I feel like he just, I don't know. And he looked good. He's looked good in the open workouts, but he hasn't fought a guy with the credentials of Overeem. And I'm going with Overeem for the big upset. on Saturday night. I think it's going to be a war. It really, Ngannou has a great chance. We've seen him punch before. Allegedly, he just recorded the most powerful punch that's ever been recorded. And he's a terrifying human being. He certainly seems to be able to knock just about anybody out. Overeem has his share of KO losses. Again, he has been knocked out by people that should not have knocked him out. They got no business knocking him out, like Ben Rothwell. But he seems to have righted his ship since those efforts. And I think it's just going to be a bit too much for Ngannou. I think Overeem's going to get the TKO. I say late in the third round.
You know, that was one thing I considered looking at, and I think we'll probably be like, oh, I should have listened to that rationale in my head. It's, pardon me, the fact that Francis Ngannou still has yet to really go up against the elite. So once he does that, you know, we will see what Overeem can do against the dangerous up-and-coming Francis Ngannou. That brings us to the main event, which was originally supposed to be Holloway Edgar. Edgar gets scrapped, and everyone's like, no, fuck, man, damn. Who's he gonna fight now? Like, there's, like, no other options, man, fuck. And then we hear, oh, it's gonna be Aldo Holloway, and everyone's like, oh, shit, maybe. Like, you rarely, when a fight gets canceled, get a fight that's better than the fight you were going to originally get. I don't know if this is necessarily that case because, you know, Holloway did just finish Aldo and we haven't seen Holloway fight Frankie yet, and Frankie has definitely earned a title shot. So in that way, I think Frankie has deserved it more, but, I mean, we've seen Aldo and Frankie fight twice, and Aldo won both of those fights. Aldo was one of the most dominant champs ever at featherweight before, losing the strap to Connor, and you know, really, in the first fight, let's not act like Max dominated the whole time. It was Aldo early, then Max late. This is going to be very interesting, and like I said, kind of the whole premise is the fact that Aldo had his moments early, then Max started to shine, and Max finished the fight. What is Aldo going to do to correct himself and not allow the fight to finish that way? I was actually surprised. Vegas has the lines pretty swayed here. They have, you know, I expected Max Holloway would be a slight favorite. Not minus 290. They have Max minus 290, Aldo plus 245. So I think my pick is Holloway. If I was betting on either side, I'd probably bet on Aldo just because of the odds. But this is going to be, you know, an interesting fight, and it's honestly, I found it's kind of hard to think about where this fight is going to go. I mean, obviously, I think the fight will for the most part remain standing, and we're going to see the kind of the speed and the, well, we say the leg kicks of Aldo, even though the first fight Aldo threw one leg kick and it was countered quickly and definitively with a counter punch by Holloway straight in the mouth. So, although it seems as if in the first fight he threw one leg kick, got countered hard, and scrapped leg kicks the rest of the fight. Is he going to go back to it? He's been talking, you know, on Twitter about he's going to throw more leg kicks this time. Whether or not that's just strategy. You know, there are a lot of things that go into this. One thing you have to love is just the casualness of Max through all of this. Just like, yeah, whatever. It is what it is. I think he has said it is what it is 6,000 times in interviews this week. Yeah, whatever. It is what it is. Looking to be, you know, Hawaii's next big thing since BJ Penn. Like I said, I have Max. He is definitely the future of that division, being a lot younger than all the other guys up at the top echelon of 145. But I can't wait to see these guys scrap. And there's almost no result that would surprise me because they're both so. I mean, it's all it's going to take is one guy to slip, one guy to make a minor mistake, and everyone makes minor mistakes. First guy to make that mistake, I truly think gets finished. Or it could go to a decision, and they both could play it safe and not make a mistake the entire time. And if it does go to a decision, I think it will be a close decision. I don't see either guy, you know, winning a lopsided 5-0 decision. But yeah, these are two masters of mixed martial arts. It's going to be a wonderful cherry on top of the sundae that is UFC 218. Pat, close it out for us. Who you got?
Well, Jake, you know, I was looking at a tweet from our boy, Alan, the West Lynn Eagle.
Fuck Alan.
And you know what? Bless his heart. He was saying something to the effect of, he was responding to a headline that Max Holloway, or that someone had put out regarding Max Holloway, and saying, you know what? I remember Dustin Poirier sleeping him. And I was thinking to myself, that he did, but you know what? He has come so far. He was 20 years old at that point. He was 4-0, making a short notice UFC debut. And even in that fight, it was a short notice fight, and he was winning in the stand-up, at least to my recollection, until, you know, Dustin Poirier got the fight to the ground. And I want to say it was the Darce that he finished him with. I don't have the wiki read in front of me, but actually, I want to say that was a triangle armbar. It was a slick submission either way. Poirier had to pull it out, though. He was giving the best of the best a run for their money with almost no experience. And he has only gotten better over the years. He does have a couple losses in the 145-pound division that have gone unavenged. However, he has been on a tear as of late that is just undeniable. The way he's looked against Jose Aldo, against Anthony Pettis. I mean, what he did to Pettis was quite a statement. I mean, Ricardo Lamas, we're talking about the perennial contenders in the 145-pound division. Jeremy Stephens, Cub Swanson. He has beat them all, and he's looked very good doing it. There's only a few that he hasn't avenged: Dennis Bermudez, Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor. But the run he's on right now, I want to say it's about 10 wins in a row, and the way he's looked, he really seems to have advanced this game to a certain level. It's going to be really hard for anybody to catch up to him. His frame for 145 pounds, that's going to be hard for people to deal with. I mean, he's almost 6 foot tall at 145. He's got quite a reach. He's got a crazy reach, and his style, his skill set, I mean, he can TKO you. He can submit you. He's got much improved footwork and movement. I think it's going to be too much for Aldo to navigate. I remember in the first fight, you know, that was something that I remember specifically talking about in the breakdown. He's going to have to get those leg kicks. He's going to have to chop them down. And I thought that was going to be a factor. And as you mentioned, Jake, you know, Holloway sent that punch just right down the pipe, you know, returning it from the leg kick. And that really stopped Jose from throwing those in the fight. And after that, I mean, that was his best chance to start to work inside to get the range and just to do damage from the outside. And he wasn't able to get that going. And it was pretty hard for him to get things going afterwards. I don't think that Max Holloway is really going to have much more of a difficult time in this one. Jose Aldo had some good combinations early in the first round, but I don't really think that there was any point where I was like, oh yeah, Jose's got this. It wasn't like that. It was like, oh, Jose, you know, he was making it close, but I don't know. I think this is just Holloway's time. I mean, Jose Aldo is probably, you know, going to be one of the top 145 pounders for as long as he continues to compete. I mean, what he did to Frankie Edgar and their rematch was dominating. He's dominated almost everybody that he's ever fought, with the exception of Max Holloway and Conor McGregor. And just with the tools that Holloway has, I think he's going to retain on Saturday night, and I think he's going to make another emphatic statement.
And that we shall see. Yeah, you know, I do agree with the Holloway pick. You know, it's like you have a young... The first time they fought, Max was the winner. And since then, you know, who has evolved more as a fighter? And Max is just so young. Aldo, as great as he is, you know, he's probably on the decline of his career. He's been around for so long. But you know what? There's a reason they step into the cage. There's a reason they duke it out to see who is the better man that night. Anyone can win. I'm looking forward to it from Detroit. Pat, you have anything else for the people before we wrap it up?
Oh, man. Well, I think that'll do it, Jake. You know, I'm very much looking forward to an exciting weekend here.
Yeah.
You know, we've got two fight cards on Friday. We got the fight card on Saturday. It's going to be a good time, and we will we'll be back to be breaking these things down much quicker as well.
Much, much quicker. Next week, maybe. Hey, quit hassling me. We'll get around to it, all right? No, we will for sure be around in December way more than we were in November. I haven't had the news substantiated or confirmed, but I did get a wire message that Ramses has made it back to the United States. He's no longer running from the feds in foreign jurisdictions, which is a good thing. He's still off the grid. But maybe we can get him in for a podcast here in the coming weeks, breaking down, of course, UFC 218, December 2nd in 2 days. We will be back to recap that. And as we go through the month, it should actually end up being a very fun month in MMA. Of course, we have UFC 218 to start it and UFC 219 to end it. But we also, a week from this Saturday, have that fun Cub Swanson-Brian Ortega card. I know you're stoked for your boy Cub. We got that UFC on Fox card, Lawler vs. Dos Anjos, which has some fun fights of itself. And then, of course, the New Year's card, UFC 219. A bunch of fun fights on that one. It'll be a good month for MMA fans. And yeah, let's hope Conor McGregor doesn't get iced by the mafia. No one pulls out of UFC 218 the day of the fight. The injury bug doesn't strike. And for everyone listening, you all have a very pleasant start to your holiday season. We appreciate the shit out of you. As always, we love you, and we will catch you on another episode. Till then, for P-Money, it's your boy. We'll see you on another episode. We gone!